My grandmother went back to the kitchen and I went into the bathroom and prayed. Thank you, God and the angels. Please, will you help my grandmother as she is sad and hurting? Later that summer I did get a further insight into what happened with Marie. It was a bright sunny afternoon and my granddad was polishing his car in one of the coach houses. I peeked in at him and he sent me off to get him a cup of tea. When I came back he asked me to sit down beside him in the yard. We sat there watching the swallows flying to and from their nests with food for their chicks. It was very unusual for me to be sitting beside Granddad like this. The only other time I had spoken to him was that first day, helping him to feed the baby swallows. This time it was different. I asked the angels, "What's happening? Just listen." The angels said, "He needs to tell you about Maria and bringing her to hospital." Granddad described that day for me. It was a chilly day but the sun was shining. Your gran got Marie ready for the journey. She wasn't well and we knew that she needed to go to hospital urgently. I was shaking as I got the bike ready, knowing the bike would not last the whole journey of more than 20 miles, but there was no other way to get her there. There was no one around to help, no one with a horse and cart, no one to share the journey with me. At that he smiled down at me, "Only you, Lorna, you are the first person I've ever told about it." I tied a bag with sandwiches, an apple and a canister of water to the back carrier, he continued. I was scared that Marie would die on the journey. I hugged your gran, she was in tears because she couldn't come with me as she had to mind your father and your uncle, who were little more than babies. I took Marie from her arms and carried her over to the bike. I balanced her on the bar and held her close to my chest and cycled off. I could not even turn around to your gran to say goodbye. It was very difficult cycling along with Marie in my arms and with my wooden leg I was scooting along, really, rather than cycling. I cycled a long way. Many times I stopped and gave Marie some water on my fingers she could not eat or even drink properly because if she tried, she might die, because the lump on her throat might move. After some hours it must have been about lunchtime I was feeling hungry so I stopped and ate the sandwich and drank a little water. I cycled a bit more, but then the bicycle got a puncture and that was the end of the bike. I abandoned it there and I walked on, carrying Marie in my arms. I held her close, I could feel her heart beating and her breath so shallow. It was dark when I eventually got to the hospital. Somehow they knew we were coming. I walked up the steps of the hospital, exhausted, hardly able to take a further step and a nurse came towards me and took Marie from my arms. I didn't want to let her go. I sat down on a chair and waited and a doctor came out and told me they would take her into surgery first thing the following morning. He looked at me with tears in his eyes. It was too late. The little lump in her throat had moved and blocked her windpipe as they brought Marie down to surgery and she suffocated. Granddad turned around and said to me, "I became very bitter after that having lost Tommy and then Marie. I just didn't believe in God anymore. I have made life very hard for your granny." As I looked at my granddad, with tears coming down his cheeks, I saw Marie and Tommy standing in front of him, reaching out to him and touching his tears. I told him what I saw. "Granddad, Marie and Tommy are with you right now, don't cry." He gave me a big hug, and in a choking voice said, "You'd better not tell anyone your granddad was crying." "Don't worry," I said, and smiled at him. At the same time the angels whispered in my ears, "It's a secret." I told Granddad, "I will never tell anyone, and I never have. Until now." While he was talking to me, the light around Granddad became much brighter, like the light around other people. I realized then that his hurt and anger at the death of his two young children had made him so bitter that it had quenched his joy for life. Granddad got up and went back into the coach house to work on his car. It was as if he had never spoken to me. He changed back to his normal self. The light around him became very faint. And I never again saw him with that brilliant light around him. I was very little to be told this story, but I knew that I was working for the angels again, this time helping them to help my grandfather. I very much enjoyed my summer in Mount Shannon and hoped that the following year we could holiday there as well. The year passed quickly, and when the days got longer again I couldn't wait for the holidays, to go back down to Mount Shannon. This time we didn't stay in my grandmother's house, though. We drove past her house and down through the village of Mount Shannon and stopped on the outskirts, outside a big house with a wild garden. The house was almost completely empty. I think there was a table, a couple of chairs and a cooker, but no beds or anything else in any other room. This didn't matter to us. We thought it was a great adventure and we slept in sleeping bags on the floor. That summer, while we were staying in the empty old house, a lovely old lady called Sally gave my dear a small piece of land near Mount Shannon. It was high up in the mountains and a hard climb up a mountain road to get there, but I loved it. The piece of land was next door to the little cottage where Sally herself lived. The cottage had a traditional style door and the top half of it was always open. She would hear us coming and would be standing there with a big smile. Sometimes she would have a cat in her arms. She made us feel so welcome, giving us tea and biscuits or apple tart. I loved sitting there at the table with her, drinking tea and listening to her stories of growing up in County Clare. She loved having company and when, after hours of listening to her, I would eventually leave, she would ask me to come again tomorrow, or encourage me to get Mum and Dia to come and visit her. Sally was very lonely there, up in the mountains on her own, and this was the reason she gave my Dia the piece of land at the gate. She hoped that he would build a little house there and then she would have company. She used to say to me that maybe in the future I would come and live there with my children. At 8, children were very far from my thoughts and I would giggle when she said this. Sally had lots of cats and there were always kittens everywhere as well. They kept her company, she said. The cottage may have been full of cats, but it was spotlessly clean. The little house was packed full with furniture, but there was never any dust, no piles of papers, and it always smelled clean and homely. I loved Sally very much, and I enjoyed all those childhood summer visits to her and her little cottage. I loved that mountain and the nights that we slept out in a tent with a campfire and owls hooting nearby. Of course, my bird enjoyed these nights up the mountain very much, too. He was getting bigger and stronger now, but it was strange that, with his big dark beak, he never once pecked my fingers or scraped me with his long claws. One afternoon I picked him up, as I often did, and took him for a walk with me. I brought him down the mile or so to my grandmother's house and showed him all around the gardens. As we were walking, the angel Michael appeared beside me, and he walked all around the garden with me and the bird. We walked through my grandmother's kitchen and dining room without my being seen. Sometimes the angels do things so that people won't notice me, and into the beautiful bright corridor with the wonderful flowers and the big windows. Your little bird is growing so big and so strong. You never named it? Asked Michael. No, it didn't need a name, I said. My bird is just love, that's all. Michael looked at me and said, one day you will understand why you called it love. I just looked at him. Michael's eyes were so bright it was as if you could see for miles and miles inside of them, as if you were going down a long, long road, as if you were passing through time itself. I always had my bird with me. Don't think I ever forgot him, even for one moment. On the last day of the holiday I was up on the mountain with my DA. We had the tent and we had lit a fire, even though it was a great sunny day. I looked at my bird sadly. The angels had told me when I found him that he would not be going home with me at the end of this holiday. I stood behind the tent holding my bird and talking to him gently. How am I going to live without you? I'll miss you so much. DA called me over and said, come on Lorna, that bird needs to exercise his wings more. I picked him up sadly. He was so cheerful and flapped his wings and let out a loud squawk. My father called and I wished the bird out of my hands up into the air. DA caught him and he flapped his wings and DA's hands. DA wished him up into the air back to me. But, 3/4 of the way across, his body fell to the ground. My bird was gone. His spirit flew away, his wings seemed enormous and he seemed to turn golden. He turned his head to me, his eyes were so bright that they smiled back at me. He wasn't an ordinary bird, he was a gift from God and the angels. I felt happy and sad in the same moment. I was happy for my bird. He was perfect now and he was soaring like an eagle, but I knew I would miss him terribly. My father rushed over, he was so upset. "Oh Lorna, I'm sorry, I know you didn't want the bird to fly further, you didn't really think he should." "It's all right, it's okay," I said. D.A. felt so sad, so hurt and so guilty, and I couldn't comfort him because I couldn't tell him what had happened, that it wasn't his fault. Michael had been very clear. "You can never tell him. You are different, Lorna. He can only see its body there on the ground. He wouldn't understand. Don't you know how hard it is for man to understand God, as it is?" I begged, "but my D.A. is so hurt, Michael." "No, you can't tell him," he said. "One day you will tell him some of what you know, but not now. Don't worry, little one." Michael would always call me little one when he was trying to comfort me. D.A. and I never discussed the loss of the bird again, but I think that for a long time after he felt guilty about it. One sunny day I was walking up the lane to Granny's from the empty house and smiling to myself. I felt enormous strength and confidence because I knew that someone very special was close by. My angels told me not to continue up the lane but to go through the fields instead. I climbed a gate and as I was walking through the long grass towards the woods, he ruffled my hair. He has an extraordinary presence, too powerful to manifest in physical form. Instead, when he's presented feels like a powerful force swirling around me. He has a habit of ruffling my hair, which makes it feel all tingly. I feel so special and so good when he is near me. As a child I didn't know who or what he was, I just knew that he was a completely different order of being. "You're here." I laughed with delight. "I never leave you," he said, "I'm always with you. Don't you know that? Don't you feel me? I ruffle your hair a lot. Why do you hide from me?" He was right, I did hide from him sometimes, even to this day I try at times because he is so big and so powerful. I remember turning and feeling his powerful force on my left side, moving alongside me. I replied, "Because you are so much bigger than me and I am so small." He laughed and said, "Lorna, don't hide anymore. Come. Let's go for a walk now and I will take away your fear of what you have to do for me in this life." We continued until we reached the woods. In a gap between the trees, overlooking the lake, there was an old wooden chalet and we sat down there in the sun to talk. "You know I'm afraid," I said to him. "There is no need for you to be afraid, Lorna. I will not let any harm come to you," he said. "People need you and so do their souls. Just as I need them." "Why me?" I asked tearfully. "Why not you?" he replied. "You may be a child, but you know more than most people out there in the world. You are my human angel, here to help people and their souls. Shed your tears freely, my little one, my bird of love." I looked at him. "Why do you call me your bird of love?" I asked. "Because you carry love like your little bird did. You are pure in your soul, you are my little bird of love and I need you, and so do others. You know I don't like being different from other children," I replied tearfully. He wiped away my tears. "Lorna, you know I am always beside you," and he put his arm around my shoulder and held me tight. The two of us walked back through the forest and cut through the fields and back towards my grandmother's house. All of a sudden he had gone. I continued up to my grandmother's house and my mum was there, helping Granny bake apple tarts and make the dinner. I just watched them and listened, that's something I did an awful lot of. I always let others talk, but I would listen and I would hear the words they were not saying, the words that they wanted to say, the words they kept in their heart and their joy and their happiness, and also their pain. We had 4 or 5 very enjoyable summers in Mount Shannon. But when I was about 11 or 12, Granny had a heart attack and was unable to continue in her job, so she left the house and we never went back to Mount Shannon on holidays again. I never saw Sally again, either. Years later I was told that she had died all on her own, up there in that cottage on the mountains, but I know she wasn't on her own. The angels were with her. After my father died, no one was able to find any proof of my father's ownership of the land, so none of us ever fulfilled D.A.'s dream and built a house there. Chapter 5, Elijah. I have been given visions on many occasions throughout my life. When I was about 10 I was out in the fields walking along the river and the angels said, "Just up here we are going to meet Elijah." "Who's Elijah?" I asked. I laughed at the name Elijah. I had never heard it before and I thought it sounded lovely. The angels weren't laughing, though. "Elijah is going to show you something, Lorna. You must try and remember, because this is part of your future." An angel walked towards me across the river from the far bank. It's hard to describe him. He was a rusty color, amber color which has a little red in it and absolutely beautiful. He seemed to shine and his clothes were long, draping over him as his sleeves did over his hands, and yet, when he raised his arms, the long sleeves seemed to roll back so gracefully, as if they were a part of him. Elijah's face even seemed to be that same rusty amber color. I was fascinated to see Elijah walking on the river. He was coming towards me, but his feet were not touching the water. "Can I do that, too?" He just laughed at me. The ground was uneven on the riverbank, with big tufts of grass. Elijah invited me to sit down, then sat beside me and smiled. "I'm glad to see you are not nervous of me," he said. "No, they told me you were coming," I replied. As I looked around I realized that all the angels that were usually with me had disappeared except my guardian angel. "Where have they all gone?" I said. "They have gone away for a while," he said. "Now, I'm going to hold your hand, Lorna." He held out his hand to me and I put my hand in his, and all I can say is, it was as if my hand got lost in his, as if my hand became part of his hand. "I don't want you to feel afraid," he said, "because there is nothing to be afraid of. This is something that you can look forward to when you grow up, something that will happen to you." "Why do I need to know it now?" I said. He didn't answer my question and instead said, "You will see someone and we will tell you about this person you are seeing." Then, it was as if a curtain was pulled back and I was watching this big huge screen in the middle of the river in front of me. In the vision I could see a pathway surrounded by trees. I seemed to be sitting at the far end of the pathway, and I could see a figure in the distance starting to walk through the trees along the path. I looked at Elijah beside me and said, "I can't see very well. Keep watching," he replied. As the figure got closer, I could see it was an extremely tall young man with red hair. He was very, very handsome, as far as I could make out. Then Elijah started talking again. "You can see him quite clearly now." I turned to the angel sitting beside me and nodded. "Keep looking," he said. "We want you to remember what he looks like. We won't show you any more, but what I need to tell you is that this will be the young man that you will marry. You will recognize him from this vision the first time that you see him, many years from now, and you have to grow up first." I smiled and giggled at the idea of being in love, or married, and asked Elijah, "Is he big like that now?" "No," Elijah replied, "he is only a young boy, too, a few years older than you are." Elijah continued talking, "You will be very happy with him, he will love you and you will love him. You will have ups and downs, good times and not so good times. You will have healthy children and they will all be very special, too, but you will end up looking after him and God won't leave him with you forever. You won't grow old together." I turned and looked at him and said, "What do you mean, Elijah, looking after him?" "His health won't be the best," Elijah replied. "God will take him one day, when he is still quite young." "I really don't want to know that," I said. But Elijah continued, "Lorna, don't get cross. We just want you to remember. We're preparing you for the future, preparing you to be strong. Think of all the love and happiness that you'll have. Just look at how handsome he is, you said so yourself." I looked again and I could see him, and I said, Yes, he's nice. Then the vision was gone and Elijah asked, will you remember that? Yes, I replied, I will remember, and I understand that he won't be staying with me forever, and that I will have to look after him. I turned around to Elijah and, despite my young age, said, I will be strong. Elijah took my hand again, we got up and he walked with me. After a little while he stopped and said, don't think too much about this now, just put it to the back of your mind, you will recognize it the day it happens. Then Elijah was gone and, of course, the vision did happen one day, some years later. In the process of writing this book, I asked my angels for more information about Elijah, and I was told that Elijah was an Old Testament prophet, a man with the soul of an angel. My family was on the housing list with Dublin Council to get a house. It was a real fight, but, eventually, after a long, long wait, we were given a rented council house in Edenmore. It was a lovely house in a brand new estate of several hundred houses. All the homes were more or less the same, three bedrooms, semi-detached, with small front and back gardens. There was another estate next to ours, but the area wasn't completely built up and there were fields and open spaces around us. Everyone there was new, most people were in their own house for the first time, having perhaps lived with their parents or in old tenements in Dublin city centre. It was a friendly place, and I liked it immediately. So at last we had a house, even if we didn't own it. Things were improving, but it was still tough for my parents. DA was working as a deliveryman for a big petrol company, which was hard, physical work that had him out long hours, and Mum went out to work the night shift in the local chocolate factory. Every evening after school Mum would give us our dinner and then leave the older children to mind the younger ones until DA came home, which was often quite late. Edenmore was a long way from Ballymun, so the change meant new schools and new friends for all of us. There was no school nearby, so we had a long walk every morning, through the housing estate, down into the old village, then past the church to the main road. The school was directly across this busy road. My class was in a prefab which was very crowded, with the desks packed tightly together. In the morning it was a hard squeeze to get to your desk, you practically had to crawl over your classmates. I was very happy in Edenmore, I didn't have any particular close friends. But there was one family of neighbors, the O'Briens, with whom I spent a lot of time. My real favorite in the O'Brien family was their wonderful Alsatian dog, Shane. I used to take Shane for a walk three times a week, and it was on one of these walks that I met another special angel. I call this angel the tree angel because she always appears in a tree. I have seen her many times since and still do to this day. She's all the shades of emerald green, emerald gold and emerald orange that you could imagine, other colors are magnificent. She seems to be alive in every part of the tree, and yet I can see her so clearly. Her hair is curly and full of waves, and when she moves, every part of her moves and her eyes sparkle like gold dust. She stretches out her arms and holds her hand out towards me, and as she does so, the tree moves with her. I have often spoken to her, and her voice, when she speaks back to me, is like a whistle. It is as if her voice rustles amongst the leaves of the trees. I remember one day I was out walking with Shane. We had crossed the field and were about to go back in towards the estate when Shane stopped and started to bark at this big tree on the left. I looked at the tree and saw nothing. I laughed at Shane, asking, "What are you barking about?" Then I saw her. There was the tree angel. Shane had seen her before me. I laugh at that when I think of it. It amazes me, animals see angels so easily. Sometimes, on the way home from school, I played in the quarry with the other children. One day, instead of playing with them, I tried the gate of the monastery next to the quarry. It was a place we weren't allowed to go into. But I lifted the latch and peeped in. I saw gardens full of vegetables and fruit. It felt so peaceful that I wasn't afraid. I walked round watching the monks in their brown robes busy in the gardens. They took no notice of me, it was as if they didn't see me. I sat down on an old tree trunk and watched. It definitely was a holy place, a place where lots of prayers had been said. All of the monks shone so brightly, they were so clean, and not just in their bodies, but in their souls, too. They prayed as they worked, and I noticed the angels were praying with them. I felt very much at peace there. I wanted to stay, but eventually my angels dragged me out of there. They kept telling me to go home, that my mother would be worried. I did as they told me. Although it was getting dark, the angels lit the way for me. Mum had already gone to work when I got home, so I didn't get into trouble. During that year, one must have gone to the monastery at least 12 times or more. Only once, the last time I visited, did a monk speak to me. He was picking gooseberries off a bush, and I walked right up and stood beside him. He glowed so brightly, and his angel stood beside him was also dressed like him. He looked up at me, he was very young, and said, "Hello." I asked him his name. He told me it was Paul. He spoke very softly and asked me mine. I told him. He offered me some gooseberries, asking me why I came there so often. I answered him, "Just to watch you all pray. I need your prayers. I will always pray for you, Lorna," he replied. I said goodbye, knowing that I would never go back to the monastery again. One of my favorite outings on a Saturday morning was going shopping with my mother. This involved a trip to Moore Street, a busy street market in the center of Dublin which had stalls down both sides of the street and women with broad Dublin accents crying out their wares. I would pull the shopping trolley along behind me while Mum chose which fruit and vegetables were best to buy. One Saturday, as we turned into Moore Street, an angel pulled at my shoulder and whispered in my ear, "Let your mum walk ahead of you as she won't notice." I took two steps backwards and my mum walked on, looking at the fruit and vegetables on sale. As I stood and looked down Moore Street, the view changed. Suddenly, Moore Street was like a golden palace, everything was a golden color, even the people. Then the colors changed and other colors appeared, vibrant brighter colors, much brighter and more vibrant than normal. These colors started to flow from the fruit, vegetables and flowers, like waves full of energy. Then these waves became balls of color which bounced around the street, from one side of the street to the other, bouncing off the stalls and even off people, but no one seemed to notice. The street was not just full of people, it was full of angels, many more than usual. Some of the angels were dressed like the woman selling fruit and vegetables and were busying themselves in helping. I thought it was very funny to watch the angels imitate every move that the women made. Angels are such wonderful mimics. They were singing too, it was as if they were humming in time to the street life going on around them. I had been in Moore Street many times before, but I had never seen anything like this. Perhaps it was especially for me, to make me laugh, or perhaps it happens every day there, but this was the first time I was allowed to see it. I found all the hustle and bustle so exciting. Suddenly, my mother, who was about three stalls ahead, noticed I was not standing by her side. "Lorna, wake up. Come here with the shopping trolley." I thought everything would change back to normal, but it didn't. I stood beside my mum and my angels whispered in my ear, "Watch the lady selling fruit." I did as I was told and I saw her guardian angel standing right behind her. Her guardian angel looked like her and dressed like her. She was full of light and had a wonderful smile and she winked at me. Mum asked the woman for some apples, pears and bananas. As the woman put the fruit in the brown paper bag, her angel attracted my attention, shaking her finger. I realized that the woman had put bad apples among those Mum was buying and her angel was talking to her, but she was not listening. Her angel continued wagging her finger. I couldn't keep a straight face and I giggled out loud. The woman glanced sharply at me. I could see from her eyes that she knew I had seen what she was doing. Suddenly the bag broke and the fruit went everywhere. The woman tried to catch it and she did grab an apple, it was rotten. I know this wasn't by chance, her angel and my angel allowed it to happen, which made me laugh even more. Mum noticed the rotten apple and said, "I hope you're not giving me bad fruit." The woman denied it as she filled a new bag and glanced guiltily at me. Mum paid her and I put the bag of fruit into the trolley. As we walked away, the woman called out in her broad Dublin accent, "Hey, missus.